Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted today to be able to speak to Martin Gulson, CEO of Oncommune, a global leader in immunobiomarkers and immunodiagnostics. So welcome, Martin.
Thank you, Paul. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, big congrats on the recent appointment as CEO on the 1st of August. So maybe we can start there. I don't suppose you could just give us a bit of background about yourself and also why you decided to join and alongside, your sort of first impressions of the business.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to. So, yeah, I've been in the pharmaceutical industry since way back in 1990. I've had a career across clinical research and development, several drug discovery platform businesses where I was the commercial lead. I've also been in major CROs and corporate finance M&A. I've recently had most of my experience in AI biotechs, so really at the cutting edge of what's possible from a technology perspective. What attracted me to Oncommune really, though, was getting back to my kind of roots in the lab, in experiencing real science in a real lab setting with real patient data. And the sort of early diligence I did on Oncommune demonstrated to me that the platform's very solid scientifically. I do believe, having worked with the team in Dortmund now for some time, that our scientists are truly world-class in the autoantibody characterization space. We're a lead lab partner for Luminex, who make the bead-based assay system that our technology is based on. And our customers, the ones I've met so far in my first 3.5 months here, have all seemed very pleased with the quality of the work that we do and also the insights we generate for them from the results of the analysis that we do with them.
Good.
So the other things that I found that were a really pleasant surprise on joining were that we've worked with most of the top 10 large pharma, and we have MSAs, master service agreements in place with several of them. Now, this means that Oncommune is really punching above its weight. When I was in large-scale CROs, to get an MSA signed with big pharma was a big deal. It's hard work. It's not easy to negotiate with a large pharma, and particularly for a small company like Oncommune, where really we're punching. I think it's a great testament to the interest that large pharma has had historically in autoantibody profiling.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's just sort of like hypothetically, sort of assume I'm a big customer, big pharma customer. I don't know, something like Roche or something like that in immunodiagnostics. In fact, actually in immuno-oncology as well. And I've got a sort of like a drug in the pipeline, and I'm using sort of like I'm not, sort of like antibodies. So maybe it might be either a vaccine or it could be I'm looking at side effects. How would Oncommune science help me as Ross? Because obviously people are aware now, having gone through the pandemic, your immune system can operate in good ways and bad ways. First of all, obviously fighting off disease, infectious disease like the pandemic, but equally with things like Crohn's, and with other sort of autoimmune diseases. It's when your immune system attacks you. So you can have good and bad symptoms. And in both instances, how would sort of like Oncommune help me as if I was a Roche, for instance?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So so the way that the Oncommune technology works, it's a bead-based assay system, and it's semi-quantitative, which means that the readout from the machines is actually fluorescence-based. So it's the intensity of the fluorescence signal that we pick up. Oncommune has one of the largest commercially available antigen libraries of over 9,000 antigens, and we can selectively put those onto beads through a histag system into our cassette system, and the cassette's got up to 384 samples per well. And what it means is that we can track and measure the response of the patient to the disease, to a therapeutic intervention, through a clinical trial setting typically. And we can measure them at baseline before they receive the therapeutic drug, and also during the course, the time course of the trial itself. What this means is we can measure the body's response, their body's response, immune system response to these events that are happening to the body. And our scientists are experienced enough that we have actual panels we've developed for immuno-oncology, for autoimmune conditions like Sjögren's disease, systemic lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, where we can anticipate some of the likely response, the antigens, or rather the autoantibodies that are produced by the body in that response. What you then see through the output of the system are patterns emerging, patterns of response from the patient to the disease, and then also to the drug impacting the disease. And because we've got the baseline, the patient at baseline, we know what impact the therapeutic is having on those patients. And we know what's happening, obviously, to the patients through the trial. So we know which ones might be developing serious adverse events or side effects. So in the case of immuno-oncology, for instance, it could be CRS, cytokine storms, or it could be, in the longer term, cardiotox. So what we can do is we can pick up patterns of response that relate to those patients that go on to have those serious adverse events in those settings. So by doing that, we have the basis for potentially prognostics, diagnostics, where we can pick up which patients in a trial may go on to develop those serious adverse events, for instance, which would give the people in the trial the chance to manage those patients proactively. Now, in the case of CRS cytokine storms, obviously that's a hyper response to the immune system. And that can actually mean that the drug is actually working. So it's an indication that actually, ironically, the drug is working. So if I'm managing those patients, potentially we see patients with better outcomes, and certainly from a clinical trial perspective, more patients that complete the clinical trial. So this is really, really important to pharmaceutical companies developing those drugs.
Okay. And in terms of sort of like, you know, your strategy, obviously, you know, you've centered on sort of the trial, the patient trial, the clinical trials, etc. But presumably the technology is also applicable for sort of like when the drug is actually released with companion diagnostics, and also earlier on in the system in terms of drug discovery, isn't it, presumably?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Paul. And actually, the revised strategy that we published at the beginning of October, we're really pointing to expanding beyond clinical trials use for this technology. And I believe it has a place, a very interesting place in the drug discovery setting, particularly in companies that are using high throughput screening technologies and approaches to look for novel drug targets. An interesting area might be in aging and longevity research, where you have several companies that are very heavily backed by investors such as Alphabet to look for novel drug targets associated with diseases of aging. And a lot of these companies are using high throughput proteomics technologies, high throughput whole genome scanning, RNA-seq, to try to really look across large patient populations. Where are the disease target associations? Are they novel? what we're seeing certainly is an interest in our technology to offer that orthogonal biological validation layer to those other high-throughput approaches to help them to basically prioritize the hits they're finding or generating from the other high-throughput screening approaches. And that's very exciting. It's exciting from a scientific perspective, but it's also obviously exciting commercially for us as an organization to expand our traditional to the more drug discovery world.
Yeah, and I know sort of like on the traditional side, it's been sort of like priced at a sort of like a per sample. You get a blood sample from the patient, and you charge a certain set fee as they go through clinical trials, etc. How would you commercialize or monetize that sort of drug discovery side? Because you wouldn't have as big a volume. But obviously, the sort of end goal, if you can bring a new drug, a new novel treatment to market, could be enormous.
Yeah, it could be. So I think first of all, with the traditional pricing model we have, which is a per sample pricing model, obviously that's very easy for the customers to understand, and it's very easy to administrate. I'm not a great fan of it because it implies that what we do is a handle cranking, handle turning, simple test. It isn't. It takes an incredible amount of know-how and expertise to do what we do. As far as I'm aware, we're one of the few, if only, commercial labs that can operate the Luminex technology at scale and with a consistency, internal consistency of results and reporting that allows the kind of analysis that we can do for our customers. But in terms of the drug discovery, the target discovery piece, I think one thing I would say is that actually, from a sample perspective, it's actually greater potentially than the clinical trials because the companies in this space are looking at so many thousands of samples. They're really going broadly in both mouse and human populations to look for these disease target associations. So the sample numbers actually can be quite a bit larger. We're looking at a number of new commercial strategic structures with our customers, ranging from strategic partnerships with a kind of pre-agreed baseline number of samples per annum to be worked on with them across the piece. We're also looking at more value-based pricing, and this touches on what you mentioned around discovering novel diagnostics or prognostics, where we use the platform to go on to develop very small bespoke panels of autoantibodies in expression that could become the basis for future lateral flow or ELISA-based assay tests, where we work on the continued development of those in partnership with our customers in a much more kind of almost licensing deal structure way, where we have project fees, where we have success-based milestones and value-based pricing, I call it. So there's definitely an opportunity for that in the future.
Good. Okay. Well, in terms of sort of like, the customers, etc., they seem to have, I mean, I think most investors sort of like split it into sort of three camps. You've got your sort of like your startup biotech, which have been absolutely hammered over the last 2 years with rising interest rates because they just haven't been able to get any funding. Then you've got your large, big biopharma, sort of your Roches, your AstraZenecas, your Mercks, and all these kind of guys. And then also you've got a lot of the, your CRM, your CROs, your, the sort of clinical trial guys, the research guys. How do you sort of like prioritize which ones you look at it? Because obviously the CROs will do a lot of the sort of the, as I say, the heavy lifting, particularly for bringing new drugs to market.
Yeah, another good point. So historically, Oncommune's been very successful, as I said, penetrating large pharma, working with large pharma customers. One of the pieces of core pieces of strategy that we're bringing out is a diversification of the patient verticals, of the customer verticals that we're working in. So alongside the traditional big pharma, we are reaching out to and working with the kind of next level down biopharma, I call them, who tend to be a bit more nimble in terms of contracting and timelines. and also a very innovation focused. So they're a good fit for our technology and our approach because it's innovation based. The other key groups that we're talking to now are the CROs, both the translational medicine CROs, discovery CROs, but also the clinical stage CROs. And clearly there, the advantage to us is that we can leverage their greater commercial reach. Many of them have very large sales teams operating globally. The advantage for the CROs potentially working with us is differentiation. So I've now spoken to about 14 different CROs, translational and clinical.
Only 14.
Yeah.
That's about all of them, isn't it?
I kind of know the sector very well, and I'm quite known in the sector, so it's quite easy to reach.
You've hit the ground running there, that's for sure.
Yes, we've not been quiet. We've been busy. I mean, of those 14, none of them offer currently what we do. So none of them do what we do. And as an adjunct to their services or an expansion of their services, it makes a lot of sense for us to partner with them. So from their perspective, they get to offer something perhaps that some of their competitors don't. And also what we get, obviously, is access to a much larger commercial scale, if you will. And if you think if we could sign two or three of these sorts of partnerships this year, and they each deliver two or three new projects, which is not a great number, that would give us another 6 to 9 shots on goal, or Oncommune another 6 to 9 shots on goal, or new projects for us to work on with new customers. And I think that that's a really worthwhile strategy. At the moment, given my contacts in the sector, I'm leading on that strategy. But we are beefing up the commercial team at Oncommune in parallel with that. So we've just hired a new head of BD for Europe. She starts the first week of December. We've actually hired a new associate director in Boston to bolster our US commercial team, and he starts next week. So again, we've really not sat on our laurels here. We've really hit the ground running, and the commercial team by the early next year will be 5, 3 in the US, 2 in Europe. And so they're going to be actively out on a targeted basis, looking at partnerships with pharma, biopharma, and I think the new head of European BD will support me increasingly on the CRO outreach as well and discussions. But I mean, of those 14 CROs, we've signed NDAs with 6 already, and we're in substantive discussions, I'd say, with 2 or 3. And we already have a couple of projects with 1 large clinical CRO as well that we're kind of prosecuting at the moment. So I think the CRO strategy is working already, or we can see early signs of it working already. And the same for the new commercial strategy too. We're actually starting to see real commercial traction and interest from our customer base in the new areas in particular that we've been highlighting. So things like side effect prediction in clinical trials, prognostic development, that kind of thing, plus on the discovery side. So it's really looking very exciting. I mean, I'm 3.5 months into the job. As you can tell, we've been busy. We haven't sat around twiddling our thumbs thinking what to do. And it's worth noting here, I think, that, you know, Oncommune sold its early lung cancer detection business based in Nottingham to Freenome, to a Californian biotech, in May of this year. And really, what we've got here is, it feels to me like the relaunch of the company. So the ImmunoInsights platform in Dortmund is really the sole focus of the business now, and really to maximize the commercial opportunity for that, but also the scientific opportunity for that is my key focus. And I'm very excited to see that what we've put in place is already beginning to show bear fruit and show that it's working. And as a CEO coming into a business like this, that is one of the best things that you can see, is to say, right, I'm going to put something into train here. You know, the company has decided this is the best way forward. We've done a lot of internal research work on this, and to see it working is actually really exciting and really rewarding.
Good. And then in terms of the sort of broader market, obviously it's sort of like suffered a bit, got a bit battered in terms of the, you know, the amount of say funding going into sort of early stage, certainly new drugs and biopharm. In terms of the sort of activity levels at the moment, what are you seeing? Are you seeing any green shoots of that sort of improving or getting easier? And between sort of the US, which I guess is still probably ploughing ahead, but Europe in a lot of other sectors has been a bit quieter.
Yeah, so I think obviously it's been a tough time for biotech funding in the last year or so. I mean, I'm sufficiently long in the tooth that I've seen a number of these boom and bust cycles.
Yeah,
we probably had, since I've been in the industry, an unprecedented period of growth in investment and stability in terms of interest rates, which has driven an enormous investment uptick into biotechs. US definitely, and Europe. Europe has traditionally been a bit of a poor relation to the US in terms of funding. I saw a very sad statistic today that said that 23 biotechs have shuttered their doors this year so far, compared to seven last year. And I think for new company formation as well, it's like down 70%. Fortunately for us, I think our customer base is predominantly the established biopharmas. So those with larger pipelines, larger R&D spends and revenues. And they have obviously been less affected. But nevertheless, we've seen issues with big R&D reorgs within Novartis, Bayer, potentially Roche. And that does slow down decision making. And we saw that earlier in the year, in our year. So our financial year runs August, as you probably know. And we've certainly seen that kind of slowdown in decision-making in the year in our big pharma customers. And this is another reason to kind of broaden our verticals to the biopharma and to the CRO with a bigger reach. In terms of green shoots I don't know. I think what I know of investors is that they're obviously concentrating their firepower and supporting their existing investments at the moment. The IPO market is at the moment not showing signs of renewal. From what I can understand from the brokers that I speak to in the city, they are getting fundraisers away, but they're tough still. So I think it's difficult. I think we are in a bit of a down. From what I've heard in the city in particular, it feels like we're at the bottom of the curve. So we're hoping that we're about to go back up again and that the indices will improve. And I really, really hope that's the case for next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it was unfortunately with SVB blowing up in March of 2023, just 7 or 8 months ago. And they were a huge funder of all things technology, but also massively into healthcare funding. They did a lot in Europe as well as over in the States. I mean, that's just taken out a massive chunk, unfortunately. And I know SVB in the UK went to HSBC and it went over to another bank. But even so, when you've got that taken out, it doesn't help matters, no doubt about it. If you sort of put all the relevant pieces together, so you've got the, you know, your new customers, you're moving further up the cycle into discovery, and also sort of like, you know, perhaps widening the pool in terms of different disease types. How big is this market, just as a total addressable market now for Oncumin? I know it's a pretty tough question, but just as a gauge, what are we looking at? $20, $50, $100 million a year type services business, but of them, not Oncumin, but the total market.
Yeah, so it's something we've thought about a lot, and it's not an easy thing to characterize, to be honest with you.
Sorry,
as you can tell. No. Thanks, Paul.
Sorry about that.
It's hard to really properly quantify.
Yeah.
I think the answer I give is that in oncology alone, 40% of global R&D spend is in oncology. The commensurate amount of biodollars, investment biodollars, is in oncology. A large proportion of that is focused on immuno-oncology, bispecifics, ADCs. These are the areas that we're focused on and in. We are still a relatively small company. And you know, our revenues are, you know, in the millions, but there's not the tens or the hundreds of millions. And I think that the global market opportunity for autoantibody profiling is potentially many magnitudes higher than that. I couldn't tell you how much it is with a number, but it actually almost doesn't matter because apart from us, there are only other a couple of other companies sort of operating commercially in this space. And I think there's an enormous market opportunity for us, and we're really scratching the surface of it. I think what I would say is that I've been really encouraged by seeing the growing interest in the use of autoantibody profiling by pharma. I think in the earlier days of Oncommune, it was viewed very much as a nice to have. And now I think it's increasingly being seen as a we should really try and do this because it actually gives us validation information in the patient in a longitudinal setting and in a longitudinal sense that you just don't get from high throughput screens or traditional approaches. It's really relating to what's happening in the human body in response to the drug. And that's really, really valuable to pharma to understand that information. So I think we're seeing a growing, I mean, the market size, I think, is definitely growing alongside that interest. But it's so big that I think it's largely an academic exercise.
Yeah, well, I'm not
So
certainly
sorry,
no,
it's my get out of jail card.
no, I mean, it sort of chimes with my own sort of like view because certainly the immune system is now becoming far more important in drug discovery, certainly not unlike oncology in terms of, you know, vaccines now to help get rid of cancer, but also everything else in terms of sort of the side effects as well. So I mean, it's become central, hasn't it? The immune system, and that must play to the sort of skills that you guys have got.
It does, and there are definitely new areas of drug discovery and development that play very well to us. So oncolytic viruses is another area of expansion for us. We've just completed a neuroscience panel, so we can now move across into the neurodegeneration field. Even in diabetes, for instance, there are now, I think there's four autoantibody biomarkers for type 1 diabetes that are being deployed fairly regularly. So I think it's now being recognized in all areas of biology and all areas of drug discovery. So I think, and this may head off your next question, because there are so many things that we could do with the technology. And obviously, we're a relatively small company. We're what, 45 FTEs across Germany, the US, and Europe. We do have to focus a bit. So a large part of the strategy that I've driven since I joined here is really on focusing where do we focus our attentions? Because obviously, there is a very large universe of the possible. And so that's why we've chosen to really focus on a couple of areas. So one is business as usual for us, which is the traditional autoimmune disease areas of rheumatoid, systemic lupus, Sjögren's, those kinds of diseases, but also oncology as well. But it's really the focus on things like adverse event prediction, longevity and aging, which is bucking the trend for investment. So there's still a lot of new investment going into drug discovery companies looking at longevity and aging targets.
And is that
And then,
neuroscience? That's sort of dementia, is it? You're talking about longevity. Yeah.
that is a part of it. That's a part of it. But yes, neuroscience is, and neurodegeneration is another key new area for us. And so, you know, we're focusing our commercial team in those areas, and we're supporting them with targeting, customer targeting, company targeting. We're trying to be as forensic about it as we can so that we maximize our bang for buck in terms of the resources we have and really channeling them into those new areas effectively. And then, of course, by partnering with the CROs, that gives us access to the broader population, the broader world, if you will.
Right. Okay. And I know before you arrived, sort of 2 years ago, a lot of money was invested in the facility at Dortmund to be able to give you that capacity to be able to scale up. Is there any additional sort of like investment that the significant investment that the company does to get its sort of like, you know, business to operational profitability and break even?
Yeah, so we've looked into this. So Martin Hudson, our FD, started about the same time as me, and we've both really looked into Dortmund in terms of capacity and additional investment needed to step up to what we anticipate as an increased throughput. And we were really delighted to find actually there is significant excess capacity at Dortmund, and at most, we need relatively modest, if any, investment into the facility in order to deliver against our commercial goals or our planned commercial goals. So the beauty of that is obviously that when we do start really humming, that the excess money goes straight to the bottom line, which is obviously what you want from a business model. So I mean, Martin in particular comes from the automotive industry, and he was quite pleasantly surprised because he's used to people running up to him saying, "Oh, I need another $500,000 of capex. I need to buy another machine," and we definitely don't have that. We're also, because we're such a trusted partner of Luminex. In fact, they've given us one of their new IntelliFlex machines for 6 months for free to see what we can do with it to enhance the applications for that machine. So we're very well supported by our technology partner in that respect as well.
Good. And just sort of timelines, how do you see the business developing then over the next sort of like year or 2 years, et cetera? What's your sort of like your thought processes in terms of, you obviously just recruited a few people, you've sold the early CDT business, you've got a bunch of cash, et cetera. What would sort of investors sort of expect?
So contracts. So for me, it's really about proving the strategy, proving the model works. And that's not just in contracts or new contracts signed. It's also in terms of the type of contracts we sign and the types of the quality of revenue. So it's really looking for robust, repeatable revenue sources. I think historically the business has struggled a bit because it's working with Big Pharma on one-off projects, and Big Pharma can change its mind or have slowdowns. Patient samples can be not delivered on time, and that affects cash flow and it affects our ability to invoice on the previous structure. So what we're trying to do is restructure the way we contract with customers, as well as the types of customers and the type of work we do, to give us more robust, repeatable revenue streams. And that's really what we're building towards at the moment. So obviously this year is a year of almost relaunch of the business, it feels to me. We've rebuilt the commercial team, we've relaunched the strategy. So it's really hitting those proof points this year to show that we're on the right tracks, and then really getting the business motoring and humming in year two and three. And I think, as we've said, there is a huge market opportunity. We've barely scratched the surface of it. So it's really, growing into that opportunity and growing into the plan. But I can't be too specific on numbers at the moment, as you can appreciate. We're a public company, our aim, so... we can't say too much at the moment.
Yeah,
I've really enjoyed the job so far.
Good.
It sounds strange to say, but I'm really loving it, and I really think that there's a great opportunity here.
Yeah, and as the business sort of scales and it does more of those sort of tests, it probably already done tens of thousands of sort of like, you know, these auto antibody tests, etc. Is it building up a sort of like a database of all that sort of like information of predictive? Is there a sort of like a data or AI play later on when you've got, because you're effectively presumably building bigger barriers to entry as you scale and you do more in, you know, more in more of these tests to build up a really sort of like a, you know, a gold mine of patient information that you could then not only sell the testing, et cetera, and for services, but you can actually sell the data, because that becomes very valuable to the likes of Alphabet.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Obviously, coming where I've come from the AI community, obviously that's of interest. I believe we've analysed over 25,000 patient samples to date with the platform, and we also have a very well developed bioinformatics work stream, if you will, to analyse data and to pick out insights from the data for our customers, that in the context of the knowledge of the team in the drug areas that we work in are valuable. But those are shared obviously directly with the customers. In terms of how we use that data for ourselves, so the new panels that we develop in areas like neuroscience come from that accumulation of knowledge. And so really, I think the value from that is really in the panels that we're building of autoantibody or rather antigens designed to look for these autoantibody patterns. It's quite tricky to sell the data itself based on the patient data, because it's our customers' data. So we can't really do that.
Yeah, okay.
But I think the insights that we've generated and we've learned have gone into or been plowed back into the development of novel panels, of novel approaches. So I think that's the value. We do and have worked with leading academic institutions globally. And some of that work has led to some interesting findings. So we have actually patented a couple of autoantibody signatures that we think are interesting. And one area for the future could be functional autoantibodies. Now, functional autoantibodies are kind of a new thing, but really, basically, they are essentially drug targets, potentially drug targets.
Yeah.
So we've patented a couple of those for interest. But I think that could be another growth area for us in the future, and that could lead to the sorts of value-based licensing-based pricing models that you alluded to earlier. I think that's the interest.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks a lot for your time there, Marty. Certainly sounds as though the whole team has hit the ground running there, both you and the CFO and your commercial team, and very much looking forward to touching base again when the prelims are presumably all come out in the next few months when they're ready. So thanks again, Martin.
No, thank you, Paul. I've really enjoyed it.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.